Joining me here this morning to talk about the Kalamazoo Philharmonia's final concert of the season are the soloist for the concert and the conductor. I'm welcoming back Andrew Kohler. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Kara.
And we're also joined by cellist Amit Peled, who is a cellist somewhat familiar with Kalamazoo.
Hi, nice to be back.
Glad you're here. You were on the jury for the Stallburg International String Competition in 2017, and your trio, the Tempest Trio, has performed on
That's
the
right.
Fontana series. Mm. It's great to have you back in town as an orchestral soloist.
Thank you. Wonderful to be back.
Quick rundown of the program for Saturday. What do you have cooked up?
Well, the whole program is dedicated to the idea of virtuosity. And obviously, Amit is here showcasing a lot of that virtuosity. He's doing two works with us, Bruch's Kol Nidre and also the Saint-Saëns First Cello Concerto. But we're bookending Amit's virtuosity with pieces that kind of demonstrate the virtuosity of the orchestra, too. More and more in the 20th century, as orchestras became professionalized, composers realized that this was another source to exploit, you know, that you could really show off the whole group, the whole ensemble, individually and collectively. And so we began with a piece by a living composer named Jesse Montgomery called Strum. It's an amazing piece that, as the name implies, uses a lot of quite virtuosic pizzicato in it. And then a final piece, the Concerto for Orchestra, as the name would imply, it's all about showing off the orchestra in a virtuosic light, by Witold Lutosławski. And it is just a towering modernist masterpiece, and I'm really excited. I don't know how often it's been presented in Kalamazoo, and I think it'll be a real treat to get to hear it.
Before we go too much further, I can't claim ignorance on this program because I've been preparing myself as a flute player for this Lutosławski piece, and another WMUK colleague, Clay Woodworth, is in the brass section.
Yeah, I won't rest until I have the entire staff of WMUK in the orchestra. So, I mean, that's my explicit goal. So,
it has been personally a huge challenge. And over the last 6 weeks, kind of resting new ability out of myself has been an incredible growing experience. And I think it's true for the rest of the orchestra as well.
And me.
There's
I mean,
no way to get through it without working really hard.
That's absolutely the truth.
And welcome to the club.
Yes, right. That's the beautiful thing about music, isn't it? I mean, it's so wonderful that it asks this of us, and that if we're receptive to its call, how much we can grow from it.
The Kalamazoo Philharmonia is a volunteer orchestra that includes current students at Kalamazoo College and enthusiastic community members as well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a privilege to be part of it. The concert again is Saturday, 8 o'clock, at the Light Fine Arts Building in the Dalton Theater at Kalamazoo College. You mentioned Jesse Montgomery.
Yes.
think she grew up in Brooklyn, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She has a Michigan connection, though, as a top prize winner of the Sphinx.
That's right. Yeah, she's a two-time laureate of the Sphinx competition, and she has, even beyond that, a larger association with the Sphinx Foundation. She's sort of acted as a kind of composer in residence and written commissions for them, and I think done, you know, some of their teaching projects and other things like that. So she is herself, as that would imply, a great violinist, a great virtuoso violinist herself. And like many of the great composers of history, has composed for herself or with herself in mind or those of close associates, you know. And she knows how to exploit, or maybe that's an ugly word, how to bring to the fore the great possibilities of her counterparts. So she has played in a quartet called The Catalyst. And in fact, the final version of this piece, Strum, was for string quartet, for the Catalyst Quartet. So she knew intimately what everyone could do really brilliantly. And she based this kind of on American folk idioms. And it's just a really arresting piece. I have to say, this was a in the car, couldn't get out of it kind of piece. I mean, it was on the radio one day and I drove home and I just had to sit and wait till the end because I thought, I need to hear what this is. This is such a great piece. And so I'm really excited to present it in this string orchestra version authorized by the composer, which is really effectively the same music as the string quartet version.
Let's give Jesse Montgomery's Strum a little listen for a few minutes of this, and we'll be back with Andrew Kohler, the conductor of the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, and soloist Amit Peled. We're leaving you hanging with Strum by Jesse Montgomery. She's a composer whose work Strum starts off the Kalamazoo Philharmonia's Saturday night concert. And I'm with conductor Andrew Kohler and cello soloist Amit Peled, who's going to perform not one, but two solo works that are essential to the cello repertoire. Why don't we introduce Amit a little bit here? As I mentioned before, you've visited a few times, and there's actually an opportunity to see you as a soloist tonight at B'nai B'rith Congregation, where you'll present a little Bach, I believe, and
well, I will present sort of my ideal way of sharing a concert, which is a one-hour lecture playing presentation. I call it the journey with my Jewishness, and it's a storytelling way of my life through words and music, and it starts with Israeli songs that my mother used to sing to me. It goes into Bach First Suite, which is what I first played in my first lesson. Horribly, I have to say, but that was the first piece, and why it was the first piece. And it goes through finding the Jewish roots in music, not just in me, and concludes in a conclusion that might not make the rabbi happy, but made me happy, finding out that my true religion is music. But I take the audience with me through that journey, through key pieces. One of them is Bach, one of them is a Kol Nidre that I will play with the orchestra tomorrow. So it's a fun program, and I'm happy that the synagogue and the community picked it up as they realize that I'm here, so I can share that side as well with the audience, with the community.
In about 14 years, in 2033, your cello is going to turn 300 years old. Is that part of your story as well?
Yes, it is. But in fact, I don't have the Casals cello here. I have to mention, but that cello will turn 300 years old. My cello, the one I have here, is 219 years old.
Not
so
bad.
It's a baby comparing to the other one. But yes, I did play on the Casals cello, and it's a big part of that journey, mm-hmm. of that story. And I will share it, of course, with the public. I was privileged to play it for 6 years. And right now I'm playing on a beautiful English cello, a Thomas Dodd from 1800, that for the first time in my life I own. I took a mortgage to buy it.
Yes.
So
yes.
I will own it when I'm 80, probably. But it's mine, and I'm very happy about it. And it's a great instrument in mint condition, as we say. It's an instrument that was hardly played since 1800. And we found it out because it had only two owners. And the last owner before me was a lady who died at 103 in Cape Cod and moved to Cape Cod from England as a child with the cello. And was an amateur cellist. The cello basically spent its entire second hundred years in her living room in Wellfleet, and never traveled, never moved around, and that's why it's in mint condition. And now it's just like a wild horse wanting to just be everywhere.
You were trying to break it in now, even after 200 years.
Yeah. So it's really unique, because usually those instruments, including the Casals cello, have gone through so many phases of restorations because of the wood has had so many cracks and breaks and so on. So this cello is basically new. And when you look at it, you can see how they looked like back then, because the varnish is completely fresh.
It's a pristine instrument. Well, you were definitely giving it a workout at rehearsal yesterday. It sounded gorgeous. I mean, the whole room sang with it.
And the fun part of it is that majority of people think that this is a Casals cello. And I've even gotten reviews praising the Casals cello. And then I know that I did my job as a cellist.
Let's look at the repertoire that you've prepared. I'm sure this is the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto and Bruck, Kol Nidrei. These are pieces that you learned as a young cellist.
Yeah, it's pieces that, I have to give the credit to Andrew, because he picked them. He could easily pick any other concerto, but titling it to show virtuosity, this is two ways of showing it. One is to show the virtuosity of your soul, of the depth of your soul, and the other one is to show the virtuosity of you and your instrument. And it's a totally different way to look at it in the span of half an hour. The Kol Nidre naturally is a piece that I've played since I was a child, one of the first pieces I played. But the main affiliation to it came to me not in Israel, but actually when I moved to the States 16 years ago with my wife, who is German and converted to become Jewish. So going with her through the conversion and going to synagogue for the first time in my life, I'm not religious, but having to do it with her and meeting a really nice rabbi in Baltimore that his passion was Wagner operas from all things, made me, I found the connection to Judaism. And also living in the States, I realized that everybody look for identity, and being an Israeli is not enough here. So being Jewish became more important than having three kids and them going to Jewish school. I really became close to it and to the whole setup of a synagogue and what it means, and to find that connection in the piece. So that piece has grown on me much more in my, I would say, adult life than the early childhood part.
Max Bruch himself was German? Was he Jewish?
Yeah, he was not Jewish.
Was Protestant,
and
he
heard this piece on a Yom Kippur service. Mm-hmm. And he was so touched by it. And he wrote down literally the entire prayer, note by note. And realizing what, when I teach it also to my students, the fact that the cantor, when they sing the prayer, they're not facing the congregation, which is the orchestra in this case. They're covered by a talit, which is a big piece of cloth, and they're facing the Bible, the Torah, so, which means they're facing God. And this whole conversation, dialogue between the congregation and me, pleading for forgiveness, which is what we do on Yom Kippur, and the orchestra being my family and friends, sort of casually in the beginning, just acknowledging my faith, and then eventually realizing, oh my God, this year he might end up in hell. Let's help him. And they become more and more emotional with it, with me. And then, of course, the piece turned into the decision-making, which we're not going to tell you. If I ended up in hell or heaven, you have to come to the concert. But, but that's what happened there. So he's really laying the whole story in a span of 10-minute piece.
This is Amit Peled, who is visiting us from Baltimore, where he teaches at Peabody Conservatory and concertizes around the world as a solo cellist. Andrew Kohler will be conducting the Kol Nidre featuring Amit on Saturday at the Dalton Theater of the Light Fine Arts Center. You have a solo album called My Jewish Soul, which includes an arrangement of Kol Nidre for all cellos, five cellos.
And it was important for me to put that on this CD. That was my first official CD in 2009. And I wanted to have this piece on it, but I also wanted to have my teaching part on it. And I found this gorgeous arrangement for five cellos. And four of the cellists in this recording were my students at Peabody. And we spent the whole night actually in a church recording it. And it was really fun to take them from the student stage to the professional setup, where there's a recording microphones, an engineer, and a timeline where you have to finish a recording and to do it. And it was really special. And I'm so happy. It's sort of like capturing a photo of a certain moment of your life. And I'm so happy to have that memory.
Virtuosity of the soul is how you phrased it.
I just came up with it now, so I like it.
Of the Heart, music by Max Bruch, performed by cellist Damit Peled, who is here this weekend to perform with the Kalamazoo Philharmonia. The concert is at 8 o'clock on Saturday night at the Dalton Theater of the Light Fine Arts Center at Kalamazoo College. There is an admission for the concert, and tickets will be available right at the door. Max Bruch's Kol Nidrei is the first of the two pieces that you'll be featuring. And now we have some French elegance on tap for the second concerto.
Yeah, the second concerto actually is truly important in the cello repertoire, the cello history. It is the first concerto that was presented in the Romantic period. Of course, the Schumann concerto was written before, in 1850, but Schumann himself never heard it in his lifetime, and nobody wanted to play it. They thought it's too weird. But then in 1872, Saint-Saëns comes, he's in Paris, and he's an organist. He plays the organ, he has a job as an organist, but he really wants to be a full-time composer. So in order to do it, I think, this is my interpretation, but he's saying, you know, what would be a piece and a form that will really make the people of Paris attracted to me, and what will make a boom. And he says, you know what? I'll write a piece for the instrument that nobody has written before. I won't take the violin. You know, we've had Paganini. Why would I do another piano concerto? We have Grieg, we have Liszt, we had Chopin. You know, we had all those great players. I mean, why piano? Let's take the cello. And not only take the cello, let's make an impact by playing one chord and then have the cello jump in right away saying, here I am, which is, I think, what he wanted to say to the Paris musical community. Here I am. He didn't want to write something that was written before, that people have tried and mastered. And he really, the Saint-Saëns cello concerto became immediately a big hit, and he became a big hit also as a composer for other things. So it really did the trick.
And he would go on to write lots of piano concertos.
No, I know, but he needed that really. It's very similar, in fact, in music history to Beethoven arriving in Vienna after Mozart died and saying, you know, how can I make an impact as a pianist first? And what he does, he writes two sonatas for piano and cello, having the cello on stage with him as sort of a, not yet, but a soloistic instrument. And then comes the third sonata where it says, now I realize the cello can really do it. I will start with it, the third sonata, without the piano, which was a shock at the time. But he really attracted attention. And I always tell my students, you know, you want to go to New York and make a name, don't just go and play Dvořák concerto. Do something that will attract attention. I mean, don't play naked on stage, of course, but but as far as a musician, do something that will attract attention, and then you can do anything else. And I think that's the Saint-Saëns concerto. And in fact, there's a really cute story, true story, about Rostropovich, the greatest cellist maybe of all time, along with Casals, arriving to a city in Germany to play, and he was so busy and so expensive, he didn't even rehearse with the orchestra. So he would arrive with his manager holding his cello that night, like 8 o'clock concert, he would arrive at 7:30. Warm up to the concert, and then his manager would hold his cello, and then he would walk to the stage, take the cello, and go on. So one of those occasions happened in Germany. He arrived, he walks on stage, and he's sure he's going to play Dvořák, because that's what usually people paid him to play, unless it's a commission. So he sits there. Now the Dvořák concerto has a three-minute introduction. He tunes the cello, conductor looks at him and he nods to him to start, but he lays back on the chair waiting, you know, for 3 minutes introduction. All of a sudden he hears this chord, wham! And he gets scared, says, oh, Saint-Saëns! And he jumps on his chair and starts the Saint-Saëns concerto, of course, which he could play any day. And that's exactly the character one needs to have there. It's a shock. It's not, okay, ready, let's go. No. So one of my dreams is one day, I don't know if Andrew would go for it, but is to walk on stage and tell the public, you know, I'm going to pretend this is Dvořák. I'm going to just play back, tune my cello, and I want the orchestra to surprise me, because that should be the feeling.
Well, now you've said this in public.
I'm intrigued by the idea, yeah. We could have a Russian roulette of concerti, you know what I mean? Just don't tell Amit what we're going to do. He has to have them all ready.
Yeah.
But as an actor, which is what we are, which is, we are like in the theater, but instead of the English language, we have the music language. We need to, as soloists, we need to surprise ourselves every time we play this piece. And imagine you're in Broadway, you do it three months in a row, every day, if not five times a day sometimes. Mm-hmm. You have a matinee afternoon. So imagine us cellists sitting there not knowing it's Saint-Saëns and actually make us believe as an actor, it's not Saint-Saëns. You're going to sit down for two, three minutes and then boom, you hear this chord. That was a shock the Paris public heard when they heard the Saint-Saëns concerto first time.
We're talking with Amit Peled, who is the soloist for Saturday night in the Saint-Saëns concerto.
We hope.
he might forget that between now and Saturday. Andrew Kohler is the conductor of this final concert of the Kalamazoo Philharmonia season. And we have some time now, about 7 minutes, to talk about the final work on the program before we go to the live DSO broadcast. This is the work I mentioned at the beginning that has challenged each and every player in the orchestra. It's a concerto for orchestra. Yeah. Who's the soloist? Everybody.
Everybody, exactly. Individually and collectively.
Including you.
Yes, yes. Including Kara. Yeah. It's really just remarkable work. And I think, you know, there have been a few examples of the, you know, the concerto for orchestra. This is not a classical form. This is not something that Mozart would have written or that Beethoven would have known. This is really a 20th century form when orchestras had become well-established enough organizations that that they could boast this level of virtuosity. They were attracting players at this level. And so Hintermith has written one, Kodály has written one, but Bartók probably is the most famous example and the one that was most in Lutosławski's ear when he was composing his own. This comes at a very tender time for Lutosławski. You know, this was shortly after the Second World War I. He was still a fairly young composer at this time, kind of finding his way at the same time as Poland was trying to figure out what life would look like after the Second World War, after the decimation of its Jewish population, after Soviet occupation, essentially, right? The Warsaw Pact set it up so that they were a satellite communist state. And in fact, Lutosławski had already run afoul of the government. He had written a first symphony that used this very thorny musical language, and it had been blacklisted. It was accused of being formalist. That's the old Soviet Stalinist playbook, right? I mean, this sounds too international cosmopolitan. It's not of the people. So some people see within this music a kind of apology because it uses folk music, which his first symphony did not. Honestly, Lutosławski was pretty clear on it himself. He said, I never felt forced to write anything. And in fact, the Polish government had initially flirted with this sort of Stalinist, we're going to control music, but then really became much more hands-off. And the other thing for me, the other proof that this is indeed what he wanted to write at this time was that the musical language is still thorny. That is to say, it's not like he made a huge retreat. There's not the same kind of difference that there is, say, between Lady Macbeth of Shostakovich and the Fifth Symphony. In a lot of ways, the language is really quite similar. He's quite consistent in what he puts out. But it's an incredible work. Three movements, and the third movement is really the heart of it and the climax of it. It starts with a passacaglia, which is a repeating bass line, and then that repeating bass line becomes a theme for a toccata, the sort of fast-moving, again, very virtuosic kind of music, and that alternates with a chorale. The second movement is a... Again, in a kind of homage to Bartók, whom he really respected, a nocturnal kind of scherzo. You know, he actually writes that it's a notturna. So it's got these very fast, very nimble scales running throughout all voices, yet they always sound covered, somehow opaque. You know, you can't quite put your finger on what's happening. They sort of slip by you.
I think of little animals or fairies.
Yeah, exactly, right? But under the veil of darkness, yeah. Right? And then the first movement is just simply titled Intrada. It's just it's meant to be just an introduction of sorts, and yet has I think would be a great thing to listen to, just because it has, if we can hear a few minutes of it, because it has such fearsome energy. And in a lot of ways, I really think of Lutosławski as an heir of Beethoven, as are many composers, of course. But he has, if Beethoven had this harmony and this orchestra at his disposal, you know, circa 1950 when Lutosławski wrote this, I think there's a similar kind of rhythmic energy and propulsiveness to the writing. It's really thrilling stuff, and I hope people will come to hear it and embrace it.
This opening to me reminds me of Stravinsky as well. There are sections just for percussion where mm-hmm. they're trading off little drum licks back mm-hmm. and forth, a whole series of pieces or minutes on that. There's a concentration on each section of the orchestra. The
Absolutely.
Brass has amazing work to do. It's just a smorgasbord of orchestral color as well. And I'm afraid we have to leave it right there because we've got about 1 minute left before Detroit starts. And Andrew and Amit, thank you very much for joining me this morning. Let's remind listeners, it's at 8 o'clock Saturday night. Tickets available at the door. It's also at the Kalamazoo Philharmonia website and online on Facebook as well.